Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Thursday night, and that's the familiar spot for the base. It is time for the Sports Crib, home of the Sports Crib Network. Well, we will be engaging in our third game of Sports Crib Jeopardy tonight. We have some very interesting subjects. Couple things that I wanted to talk about before we got started. I see Bill is in the queue. Let's see if we, hopefully Karani and Donna show up. But I'm going to start with this possible trade this week. We've heard a lot of rumors coming out of New York. Very strangely enough, out of New York, not out of Cleveland, or even out of Minnesota, but there is a trade in the works for Mr. OBJ going to the Vikings. Maybe a very, let me say, very weak market price. Bill, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing well, sir. More importantly, how are you doing?
Doing very well. I heard that you had some mock drafts today.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of stuff going on with lots of things going on. So tomorrow is the beginning of the sixth annual mock draft palooza, which will rounds one and two will take place tomorrow, rounds three, four, and five on Saturday, rounds six and seven on Sunday. Also, I participated in Nuts and Bolts. Recently had their pre-draft preview show, and I'm writing up a bunch of top 10, little thumbnail sketch draft reports for each of the top 10 players at each position in the draft and, you know, all the usual stuff that happens this time of year.
Do you think Kyler Murray is going to get his wish and be united with his teammate?
Not unless they trade back up into the first round and CeeDee Lamb starts to slide. They're almost certainly going to go offensive line in the first pick that they have, which is, I think, pick number seven, if memory serves it correctly. I'll be absolutely flabbergasted and shocked if they don't take an offensive lineman there.
Yeah, that would be their need, as opposed to their wants. There's also been
I was going to say that GMs don't get fired for satisfying their players once. They get fired when they don't satisfy their players' needs.
Well, Arizona does seem to be, to me, heading in the right direction. And I think, they're definitely going to be more concerned about keeping Kyler upright than getting him some flat chores. So, I see Don is here. Don, how are you doing this evening, Don?
I'm doing well. I'm going through my, 40 days of quarantine or whatever they call this thing, and I'm running out of stuff to watch on TV.
I did see what is it, the Green Bay Dallas game? Green Bay Dallas Super Bowl? Is that the one that's playing on Fox? I think that's what's playing on up here. Yeah, up here. We're watching the Packers and the Cowboys. and horse.
Is that the
no less?
Is that the 67?
Yeah. Don, what did you think about the possible trade rumors of OBJ going to the Vikings?
Well, you know, these teams, I think you're gonna hear more about that, and I don't think it's such a bad deal, actually, to be honest. It's just rumor right now, but I think as we get closer to the draft, you're gonna see a lot more names and teams and, you know, backroom deals going back and forth. But, you know, I think if you end up with the Vikings, I think it's a win-win situation for everybody. That's just where I'm kind of running right now.
I don't know. I mean, is it really that much of a change off between Cleveland and Minnesota, even though I guess that the rumors are that his mother is from Minnesota, or they have some ties to Minnesota. So there is a grain of truth in this. This has been almost a constant since we've got back into sports. We've only really heard Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Chris OBJ.
We've also heard that Von Miller has coronavirus.
Well, yeah, Von, I think he's the second NFL player, right? Okay.
Right, Eric Allen, not Eric Allen, wrong Allen, the center who has a brother who's also a center for Michigan State, can't remember his first name, but yes, Jake, something like that, but yeah, he's the second player to contract it.
Yeah, let's first talk a little bit about this Aaron Rodgers situation. Aaron Rodgers says that Tom Brady has nothing more to prove. Shannon Sharp says, that these NFC players are just chomping at the bit, waiting for Brady, to make the mincemeat out of the new guy on the block. Don, what thoughts here? The thoughts on Aaron Rodgers? Does Brady have anything else to prove? And there's also the controversy about Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre between the two of them. Don, who would you start? Aaron Rodgers or
okay, you broke up. Aaron Rodgers or who?
Brett Favre.
Oh, well, that's going back in history, but I've always been a Brett Favre person. I mean, he's a Southern boy like me. He likes to hunt, fish, golf. He's laid back. He's not a weirdo from California like Aaron Rodgers. So I'm on Team Brett Favre in that one.
What about
he's a gunslinger.
What about you, Bill?
Well, I'm not on Team Soul Crushing Interception, unfortunately. And I love Brett Favre. I remember watching him crawl out of a hospital bed and lose, 8.5 feet of his large intestine, come in 22 pounds underweight, and beat Alabama in a driving rain. I mean, just one of the toughest human beings ever to play the game. But he never got to the point where he knew when not to try to drive that ball into double coverage. And it was just one of those things that just, as much as I loved him, it drove me crazy. You know, it was one thing to do that in your first 3 years in the league and then grow out of it. But he went out, still throw those soul-crushing interceptions. There was, he would win you a bunch of games and then lose you, you know, the game that you remember, right? The two or three games in the playoffs, he probably should have been in another couple of Super Bowls, but he just couldn't stop himself from throwing those, oh, my God, you can't throw the ball there. I mean, these weren't like chipped ball fluke interceptions. These were driving the ball into coverage interceptions. You've got to not do that as a veteran. So I have to go with Aaron Rodgers. He's just smarter.
Oh, okay. What do you think about well, you know, the next comparisons are going to be Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. Do you think on that totem pole, and not necessarily counting Super Bowls rings that he has, but when you look at just the stats, the regular season stats, one game.
Well, I mean, I look at it this way. If I were starting a team, right, and I were choosing between those two, I would have to choose, once again, Aaron Rodgers, not so much because of stats and not so much because of range, things like that, but I can do more things with him. The one great weakness of Tom Brady is that if you have a good defense, a really good pass rush, and his offensive line doesn't do a great job, you know where he's going to be, right? He's not. I mean, his only defense against sacks is to get the ball out, is to throw the ball quickly, which he does a great job of. But if you can get that great interior pressure, and, you know, I mean, obviously it's hard to do, but we saw what the Giants were able to do and a few other teams have been able to do. If you get great interior pressure, he can't escape it. And Aaron Rodgers is a good enough athlete, even though he's not quite the athlete he was when he was younger, he's still a good enough athlete that he can make plays outside of the structure of the play, and that's something Tom Brady struggles to do.
Don, one game, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady?
Oh, Tom Brady. I can't believe you asked me that question.
Well, I know you're an Aaron Rodgers guy. I had to ask. You know, like you said, you know, and both of them are from California, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, you know, I'll just put it this way. I'm you know, Tom Brady's the GOAT. That's a no. I mean, that's really. I mean, that's just nothing to be said about that. Then we talk about Aaron Rodgers. The next guy we want to compare him to, or next person up, would probably be Drew Brees. And of course, Brees is a Texas boy, and so you know where I'm going to go on that one.
Yeah, I'm kind of a Drew Brees person as far as, you know, if I had to have one guy throw the ball down the field, but I don't know. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees. I think I'd probably take Drew Brees, but I just have a thing about Brees, especially since he left the Chargers. Another very interesting remarks this week, Stephon Marbury, said that there was no doubt in his mind that MJ was the GOAT. Now, Stephon, during the course of his career, has played against LeBron, he's played against Kobe, and he's played against MJ. His best was probably during the MJ era. Not really sure how many points LeBron dropped on him per game. But, gentlemen, this is one of the oldest arguments that there is. This is one of the players that, like I said, fortunately has played against all three during his career. So, your take on the Stephon Marbury argument that Michael Jordan is the greatest ever, no doubt. Or, well, I know you're a Lakers fan, so what about the Kobe, LeBron? Who do you think is your best, Michael, LeBron, or Kobe?
I'm always shocked that Kareem's name never gets brought up when people are doing this. I mean, they changed the rules of basketball to try to slow down Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, not just the rules like the Jordan rules where they try to figure. I mean, they literally rewrote the NCAA rule book to try to slow him down. The guy lost 2 games in 3 years in college.
Amen.
And
Bill.
One of the games they lost, he had a scratched cornea. And so he was literally seeing double vision out of one eye. Look, I get it. Like, people prefer guards, right? Two guards particularly to watch them play because they're slightly closer to being normal human beings. I mean, they're not freaks in the same way that a 7'2" person is. But a little more relatable. They get way more endorsements, all that stuff. I get it. But why does Kareem's name never come up, right? I mean, he was so good for – no one will ever be that good for that long at a position where you have to defend huge, powerful human beings. He played against 2 generations of big men, right? When he entered the league, he was playing against guys like Walter Bellamy and, he played against Lanier. He played against 2 generations of great big men. And there were more great big men when he entered the league. Now, big men, even if they're 7 feet tall, aren't really big men, and they don't want to play with their back to the basket. They don't want to pound on each other anymore. But when he first came up, there was some bumping, some grinding, some elbowing, some scratching. I mean, at the end of a game, you would be bruised and scratched if you were playing. Nate Thurman was no fun to play against. I don't know. I mean, I guess if we have to choose between the two guard guys, you kind of have to go with Michael. Especially if we're talking about playing like a two guard, because LeBron isn't really that. LeBron is, once again, to use a term a Latin term, sui generis, right? One of one. He's a combination of guys you don't normally see put together, power forwards body, built like, Karl Malone, plays a bit like Magic, but can score like, a smaller guy. He's nimble and he's fast and he's got a high basketball IQ. I mean, he may be the greatest combination of talents combined in one player we've ever seen. In fact, I'm not going to say maybe. He is. He's the greatest combination of different basketball talents combined in one person we've ever seen. He's the most talented. And this is where the whole thing we talk about the GOAT. Aaron Rodgers is way more talented, and of course Mahomes is even more talented even than Rodgers, which is crazy. But John Elway may be the most talented quarterback I've ever seen, and Favre is in that conversation. Tom Brady isn't even in the top 20 most talented quarterbacks I've ever watched play football, but he's the greatest in that he's one of those people that can rise to the occasion. He's been in a great system. He's maximized that system. The system and he have worked well together. With Michael Jordan, who I've been seeing literally since he was a teenager, I was watching a blue and white game in the old Carmichael Auditorium before they built the Dean Dome, where he wasn't even a starter yet. He was still a sick man, and he didn't start starting until like 6 or 7 games into the ACC season. But he was destroying Dudley Bradley because he's trying to force Dean Smith to play him more. I mean, and when I say destroying, I mean like vicious, unnecessary. You know what I mean? Like, oh, God, what are you doing to this man? Like, he's, what is the old line? He's got a family. It was horrible. He was a vicious person. Even at 18 years old, Michael Jordan had a vicious streak. And that's what sort of separates him from LeBron. And that's what Kobe was aspiring to get to with the whole mama mentality thing. LeBron is a giver on the basketball court. He can certainly take, right? He can take against anybody he wants to. But he's by nature a giver. Michael's a taker, right? Michael took. He could pass, too. He's a good passer. I mean, when he wanted to, he could lead the team in assists and at times did. But that wasn't his nature. His nature was to take. Snatch your heart out, show it to you as the light went out of your eyes, all that good stuff. So the most talented player I've ever seen is, yes, LeBron James. But the greatest in that, once again, the most accomplished, like when we talk about Brady. Brady's not a super exceptional talent. He has an above-average arm. He has an amazing brain. And he's got a big-ass heart. But I've seen so many guys who could do things he can't do, right? There's things he just can't do, and he just worked around all those limitations to a level that no one's ever been able to overcome their limitations for. There's a reason he was the 199th selection exactly 20 years ago today, and I was a fan of his. I was still, you know, watching a lot of Big Ten football in those days, and I was incensed that they kept pulling him for Drew Henson. But he's not a freak, right? There's nothing about him when you see him, even now, he's a better athlete now at 43 than he was at 23, but that says, oh, my God, this guy's amazing. LeBron is that. Oh, my God, this guy's amazing. But Mike just has accomplished more.
Don, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I just want to give Bill an amen on that. Why the hell they always leave Kareem Abdul-Jabbar out? That's crazy.
Thank you.
I mean, that guy was, I mean, in the paint, he was deadly and rebounded. And you know, he's just a, you know, a lot of people know this, but he writes. I mean, he writes poetry and shit. So he's like a Renaissance man. Anyway, so, you know, to me, Michael Jordan is the GOAT. And, you know, you can throw in, I'll throw in some names. You can throw them as your top next five after the GOAT. But, you know, you got Kobe, you got LeBron, you got Bird, you got Magic, you got Gervin. I mean, you throw a bunch of people in there. But kind of building on what Bill was talking about, I think there's a bias against the centers, the postmen. You know, Wilt Chamberlain, you know, only guy to score 100 points in the game. Apparently scored 10,000 against various women. You got Bill Russell, who was, you know, damn good. So, I mean, I think, I don't know, maybe it's a generational bias because, you know, the guys we've been talking about are more fresh in our minds, but I know that my mind, and if Kalani was here, his mind, and Bill, your mind, they'd be a lot different than James's mind because, you know, you got that 50s, 60s, 70s mentality versus 80s, 90s, 2000 mentality. So, I mean, but I think when it's all said and done, you can say Jordan, and then you can, you know, throw in names for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 after that.
Well, I just try to think sometimes.
Kalani is here. So, Kalani, what's your thoughts?
I don't even know what the question is. In listening, I've heard Bill Russell's name mentioned, Johnny Unitas, Peyton Manning. I think Tony Hawk was brought up in there. I don't even know what the hell we're talking about right now. What the hell is this one? If you guys are wondering why Kareem's name is always left off the greatest of all time list, it's pretty simple. His name is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar because he became a Muslim. And if you guys would recall better than me because you guys were older, he wasn't very public friendly. Kareem could have been something special as far as who the league could have been molded after, but because of, you know, religious beliefs, political beliefs, and the stances he took, and being more of an introvert, it just was hard to latch on to him. Now, the NBA itself has had three different phases. They had the phase before 1984 that, well, let's be honest, you had a lot of great players, but it didn't count. You know, you had what? You had four teams, and they had a handful of players. It didn't really count back then, and anything they did back then, it just doesn't count because, you know, nobody was above 7 feet tall except for two players. Then you had the 99 season until today, which is a watered-down league with a bunch of crybabies who are only worried about their endorsement deals, their social media presence, and they're not tough. If the real NBA was between 84 and 1998. That is when we had the greatest era of basketball ever. We only count 90 to 98, though. That is when we had the greatest. That's when these guys were men, That's when they played both ways. That's when they didn't complain. They didn't complain to the refs. They stayed on their team. They were excellent teammates. They got in no trouble, and they were all about not the brand, but the game itself. And the one who embodied it the most was Michael Jordan. I don't know if you guys know this, but do you guys know that because Michael Jordan would shoot the ball from so far away, they created a three-point line just for him? They were going to call it the Jordan shot, but they decided to say, no. We got to call it something else. Mikey said, okay, fine, you can call it something else, but just remember, I created the shot. He is the only man in NBA history to play an NBA Finals game, or series rather, with no teammates on the floor. He was the only – It was one on five. You guys can look it up, okay? It's on the internet. One on five. He never missed a shot. Never, ever missed a shot. He played all five positions, guarded all five positions, never gave up any points, and the mere presence of him walking on the court during introductions, the other team would forfeit right then and there. I mean, it was unbelievable. To see a tip-off at the beginning of the game and the opposing team doesn't even jump because they know, no matter how high I jump, the mere presence of him standing there and looking up, the ball's going to go his way anyway, so I might as well just go ahead and play some defense. This is a man that taught Magic Johnson how to pass. He is the one who actually influenced Stephen Curry to shoot the ball. We all thought Vince Carter could dunk and jump out the building, but realistically, if you saw the layups this man did in warm-ups, they would blow Vince Carter out the window. It really would. In fact, they today are still trying to give the MVP to Michael Jordan, but he, out of the graciousness of his heart, says, I cannot accept it because I'm an owner. Otherwise, he would have about 35 MVPs right now. That's just the type of player he is. Did you guys know that in 1993, David Stern considered changing a couple names of the NBA? He wanted to change the NBA from National Basketball Association to the NJA, the National Jordan Association. The MVP was actually going to be renamed after Michael Jordan. It really was. It really was. You guys could look it up. It's all right there. This is a man who was the greatest teammate, even though none of his teammates played in the NBA Finals. So when we talk about other players, I'm sorry, did you make all the shots for your team? No? Well, then you suck. Did you get all the rebounds and all the assists? No? Well, then you suck. Did you allow anyone to score any points on you? Yeah? Well, then you can't live up to it. This is a man who has changed the game for the better, and I am glad that ESPN is doing its Last Dance documentary so that we can relive it, and then the kids today can see that the folklore and stories that we tell, they are not exaggerated, but yet a smear percentage of what reality was. It is truly amazing what this man did. We should be thankful.
MJ approval. I think that the next time he gets an award, he should call you, Kalani, and you could do his introduction speech for him. I actually thought that you were going to defend Kobe there, but glad to see that your basketball prowess certainly outweighs your Laker loyalty. But one other thing, when it comes to loyalty, I'm going to throw this question to you before we start our Jeopardy. What do you think about this trade of OBJ possibly going to Minnesota? What do you think on both ends? Is this another failure for the Browns? How does Baker play into this, the whole nine yards?
Well, it as far as a failure, you would say on paper because it didn't live up to expectations, yes. But then at the same time, you know, if you look at all the variables, which if we're being honest, we're never going to do that in any situation. But if you look at all the variables that went into it, just one season with one organization isn't enough to really judge if it could have been a success or a failure. But, you know, sometimes you try to make a move that looks good and seems reasonable, like, hey, we got his former college teammate here, we got a young quarterback, we got a head coach that likes to pass the ball. Yeah, this should work. And for many reasons, it didn't. And I'll just stick with, if Odell Beckham really wasn't happy in Cleveland, Ohio, first, we can't blame him for that. But if he wasn't happy with that because it's not New York, or maybe he just didn't vibe with Ohio, whatever the case is, that's something he's got to figure out on his own. Because if you're feeling that, unless you're playing for the Jets or the Giants, and you're going to feel that way, But I don't know where else you're going to go in the NFL then that's going to maybe fill that void. Maybe another major city like L.A., Chicago, something like that, maybe. But that's something you need to work on. But there's also that, well, we made a move that looked good. It didn't work out initially. But if we get a trade offer that we just can't turn down, I mean, should we really maybe bail on it? I mean, we don't know exactly what Minnesota at the end of the day is going to finally say if this trade was to go through. Now, if it turns out that they only sent a fifth or a sixth round pick there, they can say, wait, really? Really? But if they end up overhauling and do a Julio Jones trade or a Robert Griffin III trade, you kind of wonder and say, well, shoot, maybe Cleveland said, you know what, as good as he is, we can get a lot more assets at a far cheaper price than what we're getting just for one player. So it is something where I say if Minnesota overhauls the trade of the projected trade, then I would say I wouldn't necessarily blame the Browns for taking it because some deals there's not many players in the league that you can say are untouchable. Okay, so if you get a deal that's worth it enough, regardless if they've been with you for 1 year or for 20 years like Tom Brady, if there's a deal out there where you can move on and get better assets in return, I know Tom Brady left in free agency, but go for it. So it'll be interesting to see if this does happen, what is the final, okay, what went where, what was transpired. If it's an overhaul, I say good on the Browns for making the right business decision. But if it's underwhelming and doesn't live up to what you gave up for him or more, boy, oh, boy, you got to wonder. There either was more to the story than we were led to believe in Cleveland, or OBJ seriously needs some help on why he's no longer in New York.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting. I'm also very interested to see how we're going to start off the NFL season. Gentlemen, let's get to Jeopardy. It's our third round. Don, I'm going to let you start tonight, being the senior statesman here. We have, our topics are the Raiders. I'll give you the player, the stats, and the year. You tell me who that Raider was. Who's on second? Hall of Fame second baseman. I'll give you the stats and the team. The Heisman. I'll give you the year and the team. The Blind Side, it's Double Jeopardy. Hall of Fame tackles, I'll give you the team and the year. He went yard. Home run leader, I'll give you the home runs and the year, you give me the player. The first pick goes to NBA, I'll give you the year, you give me the player. Bring in the heat, Major League Baseball. I'll give you the year and the number of strikeouts. You give me the player. Super Bowl MVP. I'll give you the Super Bowl number. You give me the player. And none of these quarterbacks. There are no quarterbacks in the Super Bowl MVP. So, Don, where do you want to start?
Oh boy. Let's go. Let's go Heisman for 400, I guess.
2017.
Baker Mayfield.
Yep. Where you want to go?
Let's go Heisman for 500.
2007.
2007, that would be Tim Tebow?
Right again. They'll go on.
Let's go Heisman for 600.
2006.
I'm trying to think. Would that be so those Oklahoma State guys? No, I'm sorry, Ohio State guys. What was his name? Quarterback. Troy Smith?
Yeah. He's gone.
Let's go Heisman for my 600 or 700.
700. 2, 3, 4, and 7 and 8.
Say that again.
200, 300, 400, 700, and 800.
Let's go 700.
1997.
Ooh, boy, 1997. That was the year before Ricky. Oh, my God.
Five.
94. 97. Let's go. Damn. Got a brain fart.
Bill?
Was it Jason White?
This is one of the most controversial ones ever, because a lot of people, the chalk going in was Peyton Manning. And to this day, there are people who get mad when they think about this year. It's also the last time that a primarily defensive player probably ever will win the Heisman Trophy, unfortunately. Charles Woodson, the defensive back, cornerback from University of Michigan.
Yeah. We have, 200, 300, 400 and 800 and left in the Heisman, and the rest of them are open.
Yep. Let's do 8.
1998.
Oh, well, Don just said it. But yes, Ricky Williams, who, fun fact, it was also a draftee by the San Diego Padres in baseball, and a pretty good baseball player in high school and, so-so in minors.
Okay, so where do you want to go? We got
300, I guess. Is that still available?
300. 2012.
2012 would be the lovely and talented JFF, Jonathan Paul Manziel.
Yeah, that would be him. 200 and 400.
400.
And 400. 2009
would be Mark Ingram Jr., Mr. Big Truss himself from Alabama, who I think was Alabama. Yes, yep, go ahead.
He's always 200. I think 200 is left. 200 and 500.
Okay, 500 if 500 is still available.
2007.
No, we've done that one already. That's Tim Tebow. Somebody already said that. Okay. Don already said that.
Okay, the only one left is 2013.
2013 would be famous Jameis, who is currently without a job, but yeah, Jameis Winston, who was the second year player to win, because for a long time it was like a seniors only award, then they let some juniors win, and then now all of a sudden we had like sophomores and redshirt freshmen winning the thing.
Where you want to go from there, Bill? Everything else, let's see. That topic is done. You can go, he went yard. Yes.
What was it? What was the second one called? What'd you call it? He went sex. What was that called?
He went yard.
No. Second. Who's on second? Is that what the category was called?
Who's on second? Hall of Fame second baseman.
Yeah. What the heck? Let's take a shot at that.
Okay. Give me a number.
Oh, start with 200. Let's take it slow.
2,386 hits, 262 home runs, 1,061 RBIs.
Ryan Sandberg, right?
Ryan Sandberg is correct.
Yeah, okay. Rhino. The next one up, 300, I guess it would be.
2,724 hits, 210 home runs, 1,134 RBIs.
That sounds like Robbie Alomar.
That's Alomar.
What a complete player he was. Power, speed, almost got to 500 stolen bases, I believe, if memory serves it correctly. Had over 500, doubles and over 200 home runs. If he'd managed to get to 200, 500, and he would have been the only player who would have managed to have over 2,000 hits, over 500 doubles, and over 500 stolen bases. But, yeah, sorry. Go ahead. Next one.
Next 400. One. Let's see. 3,053 hits, 92 RBIs, 92 home runs, 1,015 RBIs.
So I played second base. This was one of my heroes growing up. My two favorite second bases growing up were a little guy, I'm sure his name will come up later, and then this guy, who I used to try to mimic his batting stance, but it didn't work out. That's got to be Rod Carew.
That's Rod Carew. You going next? The next one? The next one?
Yeah,
or
next one.
Topic?
No, next one up, so we're done.
Okay. All right, the next one would be let's see, Rod Carew was the last one we had, so hold on, guys. Okay. Next one in line. You can find the answers now, guys. I don't know how I did that.
Well, we lost Willie Davis, guys. One of the greats.
Yeah.
I had forgotten until his little obituary that he ever played with the Browns. Of course, everyone remembers his great years with Green Bay.
All right. forget. I got to refresh here. Hold up. Kalani, how's things going on in Vegas? Kalani? I guess he must have lost Kalani too. Okay, Bill. We're finally back here. Okay. You still on here?
Sorry, what was that?
I think we lost Kalani. Bill, anything that you've heard down there in San Antonio as far as any of the college games getting back running, or how's your sports season going?
Was that directed to Don?
Yeah, that was directed to Don.
Well, there's really nothing going on in down here in sports. I mean, we're all shut down. The University of Texas hired the head coach from Mississippi State to coach the girls' basketball team. That's kind of that's been the biggest excitement in Longhorn Nation the past month since they kids left. So now we're talking about ladies' basketball. He's supposed to be a pretty good coach, from what I understand. But no, there's nothing going on down here.
Yeah, the last time I paid a lot of attention to the Lady Longhorns, I think it's Jody Conrad was still the coach, I believe.
Yep. I had a class in college. It was sports media, and Jody Conrad's girlfriend taught it.
Oh.
So, yeah, that's about as often as you can get in the late 80s.
There you go. Yeah, I used to watch a lot of Old Dominion back when I was a kid growing up, and they were terrific in those days. They had, you know, Ronda Rompola, who'd come down from Canada. They had Ing Nissen from Sweden. Of course, Marion Stanley was the coach at the time. Nancy Lieberman was the best women's basketball player in the country at the time. They had Angela Cotman was probably the best pure athlete on the team. And then later Medina Dixon came along. They were great. They were great to watch.
Bill, what do you think about the when do you see things going back to, I won't say normal, but what do you think about this sports without fans?
Well, I won't use the term that Kirk Cousins used, which was refreshing. I believe that in some sports, the easiest ones obviously would be things like golf and tennis and things like that. I think we'll see televised golf and tennis with no fans in the stands probably by late summer, would be my guess. Maybe as soon as July, but more likely August. I think that they'll try to relaunch baseball with no fans in the stands probably a little bit after that. I'm assuming with a shortened season, you know, maybe 100 games, 80-something games, somewhere between 180 games, you know, somewhere in that range, I'm guessing. And the NBA will probably, you know, kick back in a few months after that. So you know, October, November. I think football will also begin with no fans in the stands probably around that same time. I think they may lose a month. You know, maybe instead of beginning in August, they'll begin end of September, early October-ish. And they'll probably get rid of the cupcake games, and they'll probably play for teams that are in a conference, probably play just conference games. They may decide to get rid of, you know, a lot of those neutral site games, and all, you know, they're gonna lose some money, right? There's talk that they'll then exchange that on the back end by trying to add more into the playoffs, maybe expanding to an 8. And some people even tried to push for a 16-game playoff. I don't know if that'll happen, but I could see maybe a couple of more play-in games. You know, maybe 8 teams involved, but the top 4 getting a bye or something. You know, something. To try to recoup the money lost. And we're going to lose some sports. I was a wrestler. That was my best sport. I loved football and wanted to be good at it, but my best sport was wrestling. And already a lot of big-time schools have dropped wrestling. I remember in Tennessee. Tennessee, at one point, was looking at dropping wrestling. Like, that's not like some little school that's struggling to scrape by. Tennessee was, at one point, studying dropping its wrestling program. I mean, that's terrifying. So a lot of the non-revenue producing sports are, we already know that Cincinnati dropped its soccer. They won't be the only team. You know, if you're on an archery scholarship somewhere or rowing, you know, you're nervous as heck right now because your sport might not come back. It might come back maybe further down the line. In some cases, it won't come back ever. It's easier to cut than it is to grow back, right? And that's true of so many things, especially an athletic program. I mean, we've seen some come back. I remember when Villanova dropped its football program and then brought it back. A couple of years ago, East Tennessee State brought back football. So it can happen, but some small schools end up dropping football. And a lot of even larger schools end up dropping, you know, like I said, some of their non-revenue producing sports. And, I mean, for some sports, it'll be easier to bring back than others. It's like I said. Golf and tennis, if you're just asking me, and based on my zero expertise, but just sort of thinking about logistics, I'm assuming those will be the first back. Probably, like I said, end of summer, latter part of summer, towards early part of fall, with the other sports following a couple months after.
Don, you're not only a coach, but you're an official. Do you see the same thing happening? Do you think you're going to lose some of your sports in Texas?
You about lose some sports?
Yes.
Right now, like in the state of Texas, a lot of schools are starting programs, not getting rid of them. It seems like every year someone starts one. Like Houston Baptist University started a team about 4 or 5 years ago. They started one at Texas Wesleyan up in Fort Worth, and actually made either Netflix or Amazon series about the first season of Texas Wesleyan. So a lot of private schools are starting up football teams. I haven't heard any schools dropping football. I know the University of Texas Arlington is thinking about starting up their football program, and they were the Mavericks back in the day, and they actually put some people in the NFL. They played like Division I AA. Texas UT Arlington. They have a very good baseball team, by the way, and they play basketball still, but they're talking about bringing back football. So, we're having like a renaissance of football in Texas right now, which I think is good because a lot of kids are getting opportunity to play. I mean, you know, Division III is still football. So, I mean, you know, people get to play it.
Well, not just football, but what about other sports, Don?
again, I haven't heard of any schools getting rid of sports. Let me just put it this way. Texas is very slow to change, and so we don't really want to get rid of any sports. I mean, like I said, everything's going. We got too much damn soccer as it is, and you know, soccer keeps popping up, and you know, we got this B League NBA thing going on. The Spurs have a little farm club over in Austin, and now schools are not dropping sports athletics. Now that might be going on in other states, but like I said, Texas, that's a you know, we kind of pride ourselves as being a football state, but I'll tell you what, basketball is real big in Texas, believe it or not. Baseball is still, I drive down the street and there's all these little league baseball fields. They're packed. Well, before Corona showed up, but I mean, we got kids playing year round basketball, year round soccer, year round baseball, volleyball. I have like several students who are in volleyball season and they got cut short. Well, volleyball season is in the fall in schools, but they had these club volleyball. And the, you know, it's a constant thing. I would say Texas has produced its fair share number of swimmers, Olympic swimmers, gold medal winners. Guy with the school with Doug Jurtson, he was in my fraternity. He won some gold and silver in the Seoul Olympics in '88. So you know, Texas is a very sports, for lack of a better word, sports crazy state. We're crazy about sports, so we're not dropping the shit over here.
Well, now, you know, it's interesting that you say that because there's a guy named Dak Prescott that might be doing his best to get dumped by the Cowboys. You know, we used to look at TMZ and, you know, like it was laughing off, but TMZ's been kind of on the money lately with these sports athletes and from the spread that they're showing. Donna, I think you could have got at least a couple of your linemen buddies together and went through that spread. And then, I mean, it just looked like it was more than 10 people, you know, but maybe they were all football players and whatnot, but... And then he says no to the video postseason. So what do you think is he overplaying his hand, or do you think Jerry's going to end up giving up the money? He's talking about, what, 35 mil, close to Patrick Mahomes money?
I think Dak's going to get his money because I know I kind of forget Jerry Jones how he thinks, but I think Dak's going to get his money, and I know a lot of people don't think Dak is worth it, but I think with the new coach coming in, it's probably installing a different offensive scheme. You got the draft coming up. I think the Cowboys are, they're about two or three decisions away from being a very good football team. And, you know, if they get that Jason Garrett mindset out and, you know, come approach it as a business, improve their work ethic, et cetera, I think that Cowboys will be contenders. And I think Dak Prescott, as long as he has a strong running game, that makes him a better, a better passer. I know that sound that's kind of cliche, but it's true. I mean, you got a stable of running backs in that backfield, and you know, that opens up other stuff. And as long as you got your two, three receivers, looks like Blake Jarwin's going to jump in at tight end. for Britain. I think they're set.
Bill, what are your thoughts
on Dak Prescott?
Yes.
I agree with Don. He's going to eventually get his deal. He's not overplaying his hand. He's playing his hand. This is the hand he has to play. They have a new coach. They're going to, I assume, make significant changes to the offense. And they know that they want Dak, and Dak wants them. At this point, it's negotiating. I mean, that's all it is at this point. And the only thing he has leverage-wise is the ability to, and just to remind people, these are voluntary. Right. So he doesn't have to participate. Obviously, he wants to participate, and they want him to participate. But unless they get busy on giving him a deal, now, my understanding is that there's not even really so much a disagreement over the annual compensation. My understanding is the number of years is the holdup, with the team wanting to, you know, go for a very long-term deal, and apparently Dak and his people want to be more in the three-year range and with the ability to test the market again. So that's what I'm understanding, is that the team wants to, you know, wants to be more in the 5-6 year business, and apparently Dak and his people want to be more in the 3, maybe 4 year business.
What do you think about the rumors of possibly Mr. Fournette lobbying for Cam?
Well, it's like any other player lobbying for anything else. Players don't, you know, I mean, every year there's players lobbying for some guy they know, some guy they work out with, somebody who has the same agent, somebody they played with in college or played with in high school, their play cousin or their real cousin. So what? How often does this actually happen? Like one time in 1,000? And when it does happen, it doesn't happen because of that, but because the team, you know, wants to bring that player in. If the Jaguars decide to address the quarterback position, it'll be in the draft. They're not going to go after Cam.
Don, what are your thoughts? Like you said, so that they might go after one in the draft, but do you think this would be a good fit for the Jaguars?
Yeah, I mean, the Jaguars are another team that can use, they can always use a little extra help on both sides of the football. And, if they can wheel and deal and make the right choice on the during the draft, I think they'll be set for a while. They just need to – some of these franchises, and I'd say Carolina, the Jags, who else would I throw in there? Miami. They just need to make better decisions, and they need to filter out those that aren't going to benefit them and bring in, you know, some new faces, and I think they'll be fine. I like their coaching staffs well enough. I think that, you know, the general manager is, you know, there's better, but there's also worse. And so, I would say he would be a better general manager than even Jerry Jones. And so, I think that would be a beneficial move.
Not a lot of people are talking, right now, everybody's talking about all these other quarterbacks. Not a lot of people are talking about Tua. Besides him being left-handed, Don, do you think that Tua could be the sleeper quarterback in the draft?
Well, I don't know if he's going to be considered a sleeper. I mean, my God,
that's an odd definition of sleeper. The guy who was the odds on favorite to win the Heisman, but the season began.
That's I'm sure in Webster's it says sleeper, no picture of Tua. But yeah, I think you know, Heisman Trophy and national championship aside, is it Joe Burrow win it? If you look at the overall, you know, 3 year record, you know, Tua is probably putting up better numbers. Joe Burrow had that great senior season, but you know, before that, I mean, Tua was probably the best quarterback. So, you know, he was the heads-on favorite going into the season. Be the Heisman, and of course, you got him. So, I think whoever lands Tua, the quarterback.
Bill, not the reason why I call him a sleeper is because I'm sure that even though, you know, there are a lot of, you know, quarterback coaches and possibly general managers looking at Tua and saying, oh, man, look at, you know, he's done this. Look at how he does this. But he has proven himself to be very fragile. You know, we talk about the Tom Brady. We talk about, the, you know, Lamar Jackson. I mean, you know, is he gonna have Lamar Jackson's heart, but Tom Brady's fragility?
Well, I mean, Tom Brady has, you know, with the exception of obviously the suspension, only missed significant time once, and that was a torn ACL. So he's been pretty darn durable over his 20-year career. The question with Tua is more. It's the type of injuries he's had, right? When quarterbacks usually get hurt, and people complain about running quarterbacks, so that's not usually how quarterbacks get hurt. Quarterbacks usually get hurt in the pocket, you know, and it's more often than not a blindside hit. They go down on their shoulder and they break a clavicle, they break a collarbone. They, you know, in the case of Oliver Luck or Cam, they get a shoulder injury, whatever it is. That's how quarterbacks normally get hurt. It's not people that complain about running, and obviously, you know, with RG3, and there's a few guys who've gotten hurt running, but that's not how quarterbacks usually get hurt. The vast majority, 80-something percent, Dr. Chow, who is NFL injury doc at NFL injury doc on Twitter, did a study of how quarterbacks get hurt. People whine about running. That's not how it usually happens. Something like 87.5% of quarterback injuries are in the pocket. And what worries you about Tua is most of the time when he's gotten hurt, it's trying to make plays outside of the pocket. And he's not that good a runner. I mean, he can move around. He can make plays. He's not Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, what makes him so special is he doesn't take big hits. Lamar Jackson is like a wide receiver in body control, right? He knows how to not take that big hit. Tua is closer to Tim Tebow in his running style, also left-handed, closer in that he doesn't tend to know how to avoid taking shots. One of the hits where he, the most recent one, where he got dragged down from behind, and this is very often you get what's called a stabilization of the hip, is when somebody, you're running full or close to full speed, and someone lands on the back of your leg, pins your foot to the ground, and it pulls so hard because you're, you know, running fast on that hip socket that you get a dislocation. And in the case of Bo Jackson, unfortunately, it cut off an artery, and then he had necrotic tissue, had to actually remove part of the bone and all that other stuff, and originally had to do a hip replacement with him. Luckily with Tua, though, there was a fracture, a posterior fracture in the hip, and that partial dislocation, there was no loss of blood flow, was why he's recovered so greatly. He's a tough kid. You know, he had the bow tie surgeries and shape, so just so he could play. They could have just let those are not super bad ankle injuries. They were classic high ankle sprains. They would have healed by themselves if they waited another couple weeks, but they decided to do the surgery, and now they're tighter than ever. Like, his ankles are less likely now to get injured. So he's not, I wouldn't use the term fragile so much as I would say he's been imprudent to a certain extent in the way he's treated his body. So if he can learn to know when a play is dead, if he can learn to, hey, you're not that good an athlete, this isn't high school anymore, just stay in the pocket, buddy, throw the ball away when nothing's there, I think that'll be fun. I think most NFL GMs, you know, there's always a couple of exceptions, but I think the vast majority of NFL GMs still have a top five grade on it. Still think he, some think he's the best quarterback in the draft. Many think he's the best quarterback in the draft, but even those that, that have given the tick mark, which includes the Bengals apparently, to Joe Burrow, at least in part because, you know, obviously he has not had any serious injuries ever. He had a minor-ish injury, I think it was a wrist, that hampered him when he was competing against Wayne Haskins back at Ohio State. But nothing serious and nothing in the last couple of years. But Tua is, like I said, I mean, when I think of sleeper, I think about Jake Luton. I think about Stephen Buckshot Calvert, Roland Rivers III. You know, those are sleepers. Reed Sinnott from USD. Those are sleepers. Tua is not going to make it out of the first probably six picks.
That means somebody's going to be trading up.
Or maybe the Chargers or the Dolphins just sit where they are and take him. Nobody has to trade up.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. Bill, no, I'm going to go to Don with this one because this I found this to be a very interesting article about college football. And it was saying the headline read, Don, what do the Longhorns and the Huskers have to do to get back in the race for college football titles? Don, what's your thoughts on that? What does Texas have to do to get back?
Well, Texas is a lot closer than Nebraska is.
Right.
But, you know, what Texas needs to do is be consistent. They have the talent. They've had a last 3 years, they've had a top five recruiting class. And those guys are damn good. They have great receivers. They just got the number one quarterback coming in as a true freshman from a guy, kid from Arizona that averaged, I think, 12 yards a carry or some astronomical shit like that. But Texas is there. I mean, Texas, they just need to, you know, right now with Texas, it's just the mind. It's they don't know how to finish people off. You know, last year they were just beating the hell of Oklahoma State, and they made some stupid mistakes late in the fourth quarter, and Oklahoma State came back, made it closer than it should have been. You know, stuff like that. So Texas just needs to embrace that go kill them mentality that they had back, you know, when guys like, you know, Cedric Benson and Vince Young were on the field, Greg Johnson. Nebraska, that's a whole different thing there because Nebraska, you know, back when Tom Ford was running the show, they ran the I formation, they ran the option out of it, they had a power running game, and then, you know, when Tom Osborne decided to go to Congress, they scrapped that and started trying to spread the field a little bit. I think Frank Solich had some success, but you know, when he left, they started trying to be Texas, spread the field and they started doing read option, trying to go West Coast, and they just lost their identity. They lost the one thing that made Nebraska feared. You know, Nebraska's lineup would be huge, freaking offensive linemen. They always had a quarterback who may not be great, but he didn't have to be great. He had to run off, you know, just hand the ball to the tailback or run an effective option. They always had some, you know, 6'2", 240-pound white guy at fullback that was just blowing people up. And they played great defense. Well, Nebraska, they threw all that out. They need to get back to that. And, you know, when they left the Big 12, I think that hurt because – the style of play that they had in the Big 12 is a lot different than what they have up in the Big 10. And, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, excuse me, throwing the addition of Penn State, you know, that just made it a lot tougher. You know, in the Big 12, you had to beat Oklahoma, you had to beat Texas. Now you got, again, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, State, hell, Wisconsin's good too. You know, I forgot about Wisconsin. They're kind of sleepers. So they just kind of they kind of lost their identity.
Your thoughts on that, Bill?
Well, I mean, Don is spot on about Texas. Things got a little too cushy at Texas towards the end of the Mack Brown era. And Charlie Strong, who I still believe would have won if they'd given him a little more time, but Charlie Strong, you know, got rid of, you know, no more piping hot cookies after breakfast when Charlie Strong got there. You know, they got rid of some things. He made a little more Spartan the existence. I mean, they had one of the nicest players' lounges in football, and I'm counting pro football, at one point at Texas. And I don't know how much of that's been brought back now. I don't know, you know, if they've softened the things there. But Charlie Strong was like, you know, what are we doing here? This is supposed to be a, you know, country club. We're playing football here. And so he lost some of the upperclassmen and got rid of some of them, or they got rid of themselves. They had a lot of guys transfer out and things like that. And they took a couple-year dip, at least in part because of that. They now have, I think, the right coach. I think they are, let's point out, they're still a recruiting juggernaut. They're in Texas. You know, if you literally did nothing but recruit the state of Texas, you could have a pretty good football program if you recruit well. And they do recruit a little bit outside of Texas on top of that. Now, Nebraska can't do that. They could get all the best players in their state and the next couple of states neighboring theirs and still would not be able to compete. Look at the rosters from those great Nebraska teams. And not just under Tom Osborne, you go all the way back to Bob Devaney. They were getting kids from all over the Midwest, and they would get a sprinkling of speed guys from places like Texas and Florida and California. But now look, and Don, I think, made a really great point. I don't know what they thought was going to happen when they joined the Big Ten, like what magical thing was going to make better for them. Because now they're competing and competing less successfully against some of these Big Ten schools than they were against a lot of the Big 12 schools, and they're losing some recruiting battles, and I kid you not, to North Dakota State. Trey Lance, an amazing young quarterback. If you haven't been watching North Dakota State, what the heck have you been doing with your time? But go back and look what Trey Lance did. I think he was 28 touchdowns, 0 interceptions this past season, which I think is a record. All levels of football record. I think that's the most passing touchdowns without throwing for an interception in the history of American tackle football at the collegiate level. And this is a kid that Nebraska wanted. He chose North Dakota State. So that should tell you something. They have a real issue because they don't have a natural recruiting constituency. And the big cornfed white boys that used to, as you said, play fullback and play D-tackle and play these. One, those guys either don't exist or don't exist the same way. And or the way the game has changed, they don't have the same value, right? Because, first of all, who has fullbacks anymore? But the game is moving away from, I mean, they could try to bring back triple option. I don't think that's their desired effect. I don't think triple option was the magic sauce or I-bone or whatever was the magic sauce. The magic sauce one was Tom Osborne, who's a great, 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 great coach. He could coach any kind of offense. And even while he was there, they began to open it up a little bit. Sean, I can't remember the offensive coordinator, Sean something, did a lot of interesting things, even when they were still, you know, mostly a tight end, fullback running back, and two wides. He would go three wides sometimes, and he would, even with the things they would throw to the backs, got interesting. Sean Watson. So even Sean Watson, the offensive coordinator, towards the end of the second Tom Osborne era, was starting to do some interesting things in their offense. So the secret sauce is Tom Osborne. And once he left, and Frankie Solich, and Watson was there with Solich as well, that early 2000s, those early 2000s to mid 2000s Nebraska teams were still really, really, really good under Frank Solich. But because they were so damn spoiled, they thought going 9-3 was failure and got rid of Frank Solich, and they haven't been that good since. But here's the issue. You have to be a national recruiter when you're Nebraska. You don't have to be a national recruiter when you're Texas. You don't have to be a national recruiter when you're Florida, though they are. You don't or Florida State or Miami. They have to be. They don't have the option of not being a successful national recruiter. And they can't say, like Stanford says, hey, you're going to play good football against top-level competition and get a Stanford education. No offense to Nebraska as an educational institution. So, you know, it's a good, solid state school. But they don't have that as a hook. They're no longer a football powerhouse to the guys the age that they're talking to, right? They're talking to teenagers. They have no memory of Nebraska being a powerhouse. And so they can't say, if Mike Rozier walked into the door, they wouldn't know who the hell he was, right? Tommy Frazier, that name means nothing to them. So they can't draw on history because 16-year-olds, what do they know about that? They are struggling to recruit nationally, and the relationships that had been built with certain coaches at powerhouse programs in Texas, in Florida, in New Jersey, right? They had a bunch of kids out of New Jersey, Mike Rozier amongst them. They used to have relationships with powerhouse programs all over the country, and they don't have those right now. Now they're trying to rebuild them, and that takes time. But high school coaches can be, what's the word I'm looking for? Don, help me with this. I'm going to say petty. That's too strong a word. Territorial. There's a word I'm looking for. I'm not quite getting it yet, but yeah, they can be a little
temperamental, peculiar.
Yeah, there we go. And once a relationship has been broken, it's way harder. You know, it's like when you've been having good relationships with your wife and then you have a fight, it's way harder to rebuild, to get back, you know, to where you can sleep back in the bed again. And that's the situation Nebraska's in. Once they got away from their quote-unquote feeder schools and things like that they used to have in other states and, you know, sort of broke up with them or whatever you want to use, and now they're trying to reestablish those relationships. Well, coaches are like, you know, you're not sleeping in the bed yet. You sleep on the couch. So, one, Nebraska frankly needs to go back to the Big 12. But I don't think they're going to do it. But that would help. Like, that would help a little bit just by that, because then they would be recruiting people who, to some extent, or some of them, would relate to some of the history stuff. Some of them might. At least some of the kids in the Big 12 might, because their older brothers or their dads or whoever might have at least told them about the battles with, you know, Kansas State and Oklahoma and Texas and Oklahoma State, whatever. They don't have any natural rivalries even in the Big Ten. I mean, they can kind of sort of pretend they have one with Iowa, kind of, sort of, but not really. So, first of all, it's like with Maryland and the Big Ten. Like, I don't understand why they think these things make sense. It disrupts your national rivalries. It redraws your recruiting map in a way that's negative. You're blowing it. Go back to where you came from. But yeah, that's part of it. Part of it is that they don't have a natural recruiting constituency, and they haven't managed to reestablish the right relationship.
Don, is Texas having the same, I don't know, I guess you would call it a problem, like California, where you're losing most of your football players to other states?
That, I don't know, not at all, because let me tell you right now, the city of Houston itself produces probably a huge number of football players to schools like, well, the SEC, the ACC. I mean, the greater Houston metropolitan area is fertile, and
yeah,
you only give X number of scholarships a year. And so someone says, well, I'm the number one running back in Texas, and someone says, well, I'm the number five running back in Texas. A lot of times there's not that much difference between the two. It's just,
well,
you know, these analysts.
The number 55 running back in Texas is better than the best running back in Delaware or Nebraska.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, I mean, we have plenty of kids to fill up our D1 programs. If you look at the roster of Oklahoma, it's traditionally Texan rich. LSU, a lot of Texans at LSU, a lot of Texans at Georgia, believe it or not. You know, we talk about our quarterbacks from Texas, like Drew Brees, Andrew Luck, and all these guys. They didn't go to school in Texas. You know, Brees went to Purdue.
That is a great one, dude.
Yeah, Luck was at Stanford. I mean, you know, so, I mean, there is
Matt
no.
Matt Stafford went to Georgia.
Yeah, Stafford went to Georgia. We're going to be losing kids from the state of Texas. This has been going on since the 70s and 80s. I mean, a lot of kids just, you know, they don't go play elsewhere. And so, like I said, you can only give X number of scholarships per year. You know, back when Darrell Royal was roaming the sidelines and Bear Bryant, you know, schools could offer as many kids as they wanted to. And in fact, I know that for a fact that Darrell Royal used to recruit kids just so Oklahoma and Arkansas or A&M wouldn't get them.
Yep.
Those days are gone.
Bill, any news or anything that you've heard as far as HBCU colleges are concerned, and you know, their players, you know, possible. Have you heard that is the season going to be canceled?
Everyone's taking a wait and see approach. Everyone everywhere is doing that. But it should be noted, while people talk about football as a cash cow, what people forget is that the vast majority of football programs do not run in the black, they run in the red. The reason that HBCU programs don't even try nowadays to compete for the FCS National Championship or Division II National Championships, for the most part, is because there's no real money in it. And so they put all of their effort into, you know, winning their conference championship and going on to these, you know, things like the Celebration Bowl. And, you know, we obviously the Bayou Classic, because those things are money makers. Those two games, and then they usually take, you know, some, you know, beat the living crap out of us for money game against an SEC or Big 12 or whatever school. That's their nut. Like, that funds their program, that they get a few hundred thousand dollars from taking a butt-whipping from whoever, you know, and, they go play Rutgers, or they go play, you know, Texas or LSU or whoever it is, you know, and get slapped around and thank you very much. We needed this. And they, like I said, the money from their postseason classics, you know, things like that. That's why it's so important to get to those games, right? Because they don't get the big television contracts. They don't have the same sort of gate receipts and licensing deals and all the other stuff, all the ancillary forms of revenue. So they're dependent upon gate. They're dependent upon the few things that they do get. You know, once again, there's a multi-year big-time television deal for the Bayou Classic. So that helps Grambling and, you know, or whoever makes it, but usually it's Grambling and Southern or whatever it is. But there are programs that are already on the brink long before this change. There are programs that are, you know, Central in Ohio and a few others were on the brink. Like, they were hemorrhaging and have been hemorrhaging money for years and years and years. And they don't have the big endowment. So unless there's some sort of bailout or something coming, yes, we're going to lose some programs, depending on how long this goes on. And it's very, very sad. But, you know, there's some that are fine. Tuskegee's fine. They're probably one of the more financially sound, at least in the athletic department, financially sound, you know, Division II HBCUs. But schools like Langston, you know, they're in trouble. Schools like Central, like I mentioned, they're in trouble. There's football programs that, like I said, long before this, without coronavirus or anything else, were already on the brink. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if two or three HBCUs ended up dropping, if not football, then one of their non – or two, I guess, would have to balance it because of Title IX. So they have to drop probably one on the women's side and one on the men's side or whatever. We'll see. But, yes, there's some trouble.
Hey, Bill. Bill.
Yep.
I don't interrupt. You mentioned Langston, which is kind of funny because one of my best friends was a three-year letterman at Langston. And when I would travel up to Stillwater to go watch my nephew play OSU, one day I was driving down and I saw a sign that said Langston, 15 miles. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go to Langston. I'm going to check it out. And it is like in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
And there's like a beer joint, a barbecue joint. There's a couple of churches, some houses. But when I drove on campus, I kind of stepped out and I took pictures of the stadium and all that. And it was a very, I mean, the campus of Langston is kind of on the hill. It's very picturesque. It's beautiful. Yeah. I think it's an agricultural school.
Yeah.
But I took pictures. I sent them to Tony Watson, my friend, and he said, you know what? He said, we didn't have facilities like that. He said, they've really upgraded. And I mean, the stadium was comparable to, I would say, like maybe a 4A high school in Texas, but they had the artificial natural turf look. What I don't know what it's called. It has a little
black
color. They had all-weather track. They had a small video scoreboard. I mean, it was really nice. And the dormitories were fine. So I don't know who they play. I don't know. I mean, I can't even tell you who they play. But the only thing Langston has going against it, it's in the middle of nowhere. But the facilities are fine. I just thought
it's not an issue of facilities. The issue is they already were running – they're already leaking money. You know, that's the real issue. And now, you know, without any more income, I don't know how much longer they'll have to train staff. I mean, they don't have a big endowment, right? I mean, there's not like there's a big cushion. If you're Notre Dame's going to be fine. You know what I mean? Like Notre Dame
has
a nine-figure endowment, damn close to a billion. I mean, I'm not even joking when I say that. They're in the upper hundreds of millions, close to a billion. They're going to be okay, right? USC is going to be just fine. Miami's going to be fine. Alabama, right? The issue is these smaller private and even a few smaller state institutions that just don't have the cushion. So every year they're just making it. Like, we just covered our budget. Or we didn't cover our budget, but we can raise funds to cover or whatever. If they were already 600 in the hole, right, 200 grand in the hole, and they could figure out a way to cover that, but now something happens where they can't, the things that normally cover that, and now they have to try to operate without anything coming in, and now they're 1.1 million in the hole, and the Board of Regents says, nope, sorry, but that's not going to happen. We can't sign off on this, now what? And unless they can get an infusion, you know, to cover the income from somebody, from somewhere, we're going to see some things go.
Well, guys, once again, time passes when you're having we got to find those Jeopardy answers, and we'll get back into that next week. Or at least we'll see. Maybe we'll have some sports news. It's kind of you know, interesting seeing First Take and Undisputed back on the air. So that's a little refreshing. Not a lot of new highlights, so we all are kind of just watching the same thing. Kind of interesting seeing who's going to be the first city to open up sports, the first state. There's a lot of talk. Bob Arum is talking about going to Florida since the WWE is considered an essential work
the face now.
Yeah.
Don, don't you ever say anything about California again. The WWE is an essential workplace. Yeah, I mean they're not even going back to work in Las Vegas yet. Come on, yeah. But anyway, hey, nice talking with everyone. Some sports tonight, Bill. Why don't you give us your final thoughts? Tell everybody where they can find you, and I know you got some drafts coming up this week.
It's all draft for me. The next. I guess it's 6 or so days or 7 or so. Yeah, right. Yeah, so yeah. The next slightly over, I guess, 6 days and a couple hours, it's all draft for me. It's, you know, I'll be doing my day job kind of, but mostly I'll be focusing on the NFL draft. A bunch of articles. And, of course, this weekend, a 7-round live mock, the 6th annual Mock Draft Palooza with fabulous-ish prizes for the top 3 drafts is voted upon by an expert panel. Still interviewing prospects as they talk about, you know, what's going on and how to adapt to this. Once again, happy Thomas Edward Brady Day. Obviously on this day, 20 years ago, he was 199th selection in the NFL draft. Happy Bill Belichick Day, which, you know, 68th birthday, and not a coincidence, I guess, that he got his best birthday present ever 20 years ago. And of course, like I said, very sad is what I was trying to say, a very sad and, I guess thoughtful sayonara to the great Willie Davis, who, if someone can be a very underrated Hall of Fame player, Willie Davis was certainly one of those. He was not flashy, but extremely complete. He was terrific against the run. He was great against the pass. He had power. He had speed. He had a very high football IQ and a relentless player with extremely high character. Very sad to hear of his passing. And then last but not least, for all those young men who are normally getting to the end of a race for them, you know, started when they were, in many cases, children, taking them all throughout, you know, youth league, high school, college. And then normally either you get drafted or you'd be brought in as an undrafted free agent or even brought in for a tryout. I'm not so much worried about all the big names. They're going to be fine, right? Those guys are going to be drafted wherever they're going to be drafted, and they'll be fine. But what will happen for the undrafted free agents? And normally what would happen? And, you know, would they be brought in to a camp and all that? And how will the undrafted period, because the draft is going to go just fine, but the undrafted free agency that happens, that's what I call the 8th round, is a real feeding frenzy normally. And, you know, people are just pounding the phones trying to get through these guys to sign them and bring them into camp. That will be very different this year, and I'll be interested to see how that happens. So I'm talking to young men about that part of the process as well and how they're planning to handle that. So we will look back on this year and we'll remember certain things, you know, things that were different, and we'll remember the Final Four that wasn't. And, you know, young Sabrina Ionescu, this amazing young woman who was inspired by, probably at least part by Kobe Bryant, who didn't get a chance to make her run for a national championship on the women's side. And, you know, all the things that we lost, I hope we'll also remember there will be some innovations. Things will be learned. Some things will be changed, maybe even for the better. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I only hope there'll be some sort of silver lining, but, you know, most importantly, please take care of each other. Wash your hands. Remain socially distant. Pray. Pray for all of us. Pray for the people who are involved in frontline care, our first responders, and our scientists. You know, Americans can be very funny about science sometimes. Well, don't be funny about science now. Embrace science. And, you know, if you're holding people up in prayer, hold up our scientists.
And where can they find you? Well, you already did. You tell everybody where they can find you.
Oh, okay. Yes. So my articles will be popping up on Nuts and Bolts Sports, as they always do. You can find my position rankings. They'll be popping up there in a couple of days, or maybe even tomorrow. You can find the results of the mock draft of Palooza there, and something else. Oh, and my all underappreciated team, underrated prospects, all that good stuff. Sweepers, not of the Tua Tagovailoa variety, but sweepers more of the, you know, the actual variety, you know, Darrington Evans and, you know, guys who are Roland Rivers the third, Case Cookus, those kind of guys. But, yes, you can find me at capital B, capital C, A-R-R-O-L-L 138, or at 11, that's the word, not the number, E-L-E-V-E-N-B-R-A-V-O 138 on Twitter. It's always a pleasure, an honor, and a privilege, gentlemen.
You have a great night, Bill, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. Don, your final thoughts, and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Okay, well, final thoughts. It's, again, good discussion tonight. I can talk football all day, I guess. So my final thoughts, and this really has nothing to do with anything we talk about tonight, but I just saw on the news scroll that they're going to start having a horse tournament with these basketball players, giving them something to do, something that's fun to watch, a little social distancing. I was a damn good horse player, because the one thing I could do as a basketball player in my very brief career, which went from 7th grade to my sophomore year in high school, is I could shoot free throws. I couldn't do much else. I could, you know, rebound, but I could shoot free throws. And so I guess if you watch the horse tournaments, we'll find out who is, you know, who has the real skills, I guess. Anyway, just because of that, Charles Barkley would never win a horse game, I guess. Anyway, I can be found Don Hayes on Facebook, Purport3 on Instagram. I don't do a lot of Twitter, but I probably had maybe 3 tweets in my entire life. So good to see, being with y'all guys, and I'll see y'all next week.
All right, guys. Well, hey, everyone have a good week. Be safe. Keep your family safe, and look forward to talking to everyone right back here next Thursday on the Sports Grid. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.